We're going to start with the first verse of Matthew chapter 18, and we're going to read the whole passage.
Nađe Evanđelje po Mateju 18. glava da se pročita sa Božjom pomoći.
At the same time came the disciples unto Jesus, saying, Who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? And Jesus called a little child unto him, and set him in the midst of them, and said, Verily, I say unto you, except you be converted, and become as little children, you shall not enter into the kingdom of heaven. Whosoever therefore shall humble himself as this little child, the same is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And whoso shall receive one such little child in my name receiveth me. But whoso shall offend one of these little ones which believe in me, it were better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck, and that he were drowned in the depth of the sea. Woe unto the world because of offenses, for it must needs be that offenses come. But woe to the man by whom the offenses cometh. Wherefore, if thy hand or thy foot offend thee, cut them off and cast them from thee. It is better for thee to enter into life halt or maimed, rather than having two hands or two feet to be cast into everlasting fire. And if thine eye offend thee, pluck it out and cast it from thee. It is better for thee to enter life into life with one eye, rather than having two eyes to be cast into hellfire. Take heed that you despise not one of these little ones. For I say unto you that in heaven their angels do always behold the face of my Father which is in heaven. For the Son of Man is come to save that which was lost. How think ye? If a man have 100 sheep, and one of them be gone astray, doth he not leave the 99, and goeth into the mountains, and seeketh that which is gone astray? And if so be that he find it, verily I say unto you, he rejoiceth more of that sheep than of the 99 which went not astray. Even so, it is not the will of your Father which is in heaven that one of these little ones should perish. Moreover, if thy brother shall trespass against thee, go and tell him his fault between thee and him alone. If he shall hear thee, thou hast gained thy brother. But if he will not hear thee, then take with thee one or two more, that in the mouth of two or three witnesses every word may be established. And if he shall neglect to hear them, tell it unto the church. But if he neglect to hear the church, let him be unto thee as a heathen and as a publican. Verily I say unto you, whatsoever ye shall bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatsoever ye shall loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven. Again I say unto you that if two of you shall agree on earth as touching anything that they shall ask. Sorry, let me read that again. Again I say unto you that if two of you shall agree on earth as touching anything that they shall ask, it shall be done for them of my Father which is in heaven. For where two or three are gathered together in my name, there am I in the midst of them. Then came Peter to him and said, Lord, how oft shall my brother sin against me and I forgive him? Till 7 times? And Jesus saith unto him, I say not unto thee until 7 times, but until 70 times 7. Therefore is the kingdom of heaven likened unto a certain king, which would take account of his servants. And when he had begun to reckon, one was brought unto him which owed him 10,000 talents. But forasmuch as he had not to pay, his Lord commanded him to be sold, and his wife and children, and all that he had, in payment to be made. The servant therefore fell down and worshipped him, saying, Lord, have patience with me, and I will pay thee all. And then the Lord of that servant was moved with compassion, and loosed him, and forgave him the debt. But the same servant went out and found one of his fellow servants, which owed him 100 pence, and he laid hands on him, and took him by the throat, saying, Pay me that thou owest. And his fellow servant fell down at his feet and besought him, saying, Have patience with me, I will pay thee all. And he would not, but went and cast him into prison till he should pay the debt. So when his fellow servant saw that what was done, they were very sorry, and came and told unto their Lord all that was done. And then his Lord, after that he had called him, said unto him, O thou wicked servant, I forgave thee all that debt because thou desirest me. Shouldest not thou also have had compassion on thy fellow servant, even as I had pity on thee? And his Lord was wroth and delivered him to the tormentors till he should pay all that was due unto him. So likewise shall my heavenly Father do also unto you, if you from your hearts forgive not every one his brother their trespasses. We finish with verse 35. On some level, this is not an easy passage. The disciples, and this is a parallel passage. It has similar characteristics to Mark chapter 9 and Luke chapter 9. But the disciples come to Jesus, and they want to know who's the greatest. And we can picture when John and James came, right, and their mom wanted them to sit on the right side and left side of Jesus, and this idea of who's the most important. So they come to him with that in mind, and Jesus does something that's probably a little unexpected. He grabs a little child, calls a little child that was nearby, brings him close, and maybe sets him on his lap, and in the midst of them, and he simply says, unless you change your mind, unless you change, you be converted, to become innocent and pure on some level, like this little child, you'll never get into the kingdom of heaven. He goes in, and we look at verses 6 through 10 in the passage, and this whole notion about cutting off your plucking out your eye, cutting off your hand if it offends you, revolves around the notion of offending one of these little ones. That if I'm in my behavior or my actions or my eyes are offending believers, young believers, I need to get rid of the things that affect me, right? So the conversation and the focus that Jesus has initially is really the true measure of greatness and who's really important, and the fact that all are important. Because in the eyes of the disciples and in the eyes of the society at that time, those children were likely not very important. There's a lot of them running around. They were kind of pushed off to the side. We read in other passages, the disciples are saying, hey, they need to back off. And yet Jesus brings one of those little children in, and we read that in other passages again, and points to the importance of this little child and talks about them being the greatest. And so I wanted to just start with this passage and ask, how important is everybody to you? If I was to pick somebody out, would I be able to say they are important to me? Probably say, sure, right? But really, how important is your brother or sister to you? If I pick somebody, Darren, Ruslan, if I said, you are not important to me, probably wouldn't sound so good, right? That just doesn't sound good. If you told your sibling, you are not important to me, none of us would find that acceptable. So this passage, and the reason it's difficult, is it challenges us with not the words, you are not important to me, but it challenges us with how important are you to me? And do I show it? Or am I really showing by my actions that you're not important? And so let's keep digging in here. And we're going to focus on right now from verses 10 to 14. And then we'll jump into 15 through 17. And then also we'll try to tackle the last portion with the parable that Jesus gives. So verses 10 through 14, Jesus then, after talking about if your eye offends you, pluck it out. If your hand offends you or your foot, cut it off. He says in verse 10, take heed that you despise not one of these little ones. For I say unto you that in heaven their angels do always behold the face of my Father which is in heaven. Now, the notion would be that these little ones is the childlike heart that is visible in these little ones, right? And that even the little ones are very important. But that young, innocent heart, maybe of a true convert, is really, really valuable to God. And we start to see this in the parable that Jesus gives. For he starts with saying, for the Son of Man has come to save that which was lost. And we know that, right? We preach that, we talk it, we believe it, we say it. Jesus starts that passage with saying that this is why I am here, to save the lost. It starts to speak to the love of God. It starts to speak to the reason that he's on earth. He establishes his kind of the reason he's there. But what he says next is profound. Maybe we don't see it that way, but it's profound. He says, let me give you an example. Let me give you an example. A man had 100 sheep. He had 100 sheep, and one of them wandered off. What does the man do? Doesn't he leave the 99 and go into the mountains and seek the one that has wandered off? Doesn't he do that, he says. So right there in that framework, we see a lot of meaning in what Jesus says. So what is the implication? The implication is that one sheep is very important. Because he says, doesn't he? This is a rhetorical question. Of course he does, is the implication. So, doesn't he? Well, of course. Of course he's going to leave 99 sheep to find the one. But does that make sense? I mean, you have 99 other sheep that you're going to leave to go find the one. Right? 99 other sheep that you're going to leave to go find the one. I mean, I'm not a shepherd and I don't know sheep that well, but they seem to have a lot of lambs. So in a year period, I'd probably be making up my losses. I'd lose the one, but I'd gain a lot of others, right? Because sheep have, what are they called, kids? I think that's what they're called, lambs or kids. I don't know. No, those are goats. Sorry. I'm not a farmer, but you get what I mean. They're going to have a lot of them. And so, hey, before I know it, I'll have plenty. But no, the shepherd doesn't do that. The man who owns the sheep doesn't do that. This sheep is important. And it speaks to value and importance. And so the question for the people here, as Jesus is laying out this story for his disciples, is how important is the sheep? Well, it's very important. It's very valuable. The man isn't cutting his losses. He's not just dumping it to the side. He is actually going out and finding that important stray. So what does important mean? If you took a penny and you lost a penny, how much time would you spend looking for a penny? I'd venture to guess not much. If you lost a penny and it dropped on the roll and you were using it, you dropped on the floor and it rolled, you might look around and grab it because you needed it. But if it dropped in a big garbage pail full of yuck, I'm venture to guess most of us would put our hand in our pocket and see if I had another penny, right? I'd pull out my wallet, my purse, I'd be looking for another penny. I really would not want to go digging in the pile of yuck to find another penny. So that penny is not important. But if I dropped a gold ingot, a bar, into that pile of yuck? How many of us would go digging? I venture to say that if I asked for a show of hands, every hand would go up, because that gold bar is worth thousands and thousands of dollars. And we'd all go digging through the yuck to find that bar of gold. But we wouldn't do it for a penny. And so this man says, nothing is going to stand in my way of finding this lost sheep. I'm going to go up on the mountainside to look for him. I'm going to leave the 99. I'm going up on the mountain to find the stray. Do you picture the man dragging his feet in this image that Jesus gives? Do you picture the man kind of shuffling and, I don't really feel like doing this. I've got better things to do. I don't get that sense in this man. The story that Jesus gives creates a sense of urgency that this man, he's leaving the 99, he's going up into the mountain, and he's seeking that which has gone astray. And he's going to persist until he finds that sheep that's gone astray. Because we read that when, and if so be that he find it. So this idea that he's going to look just in case he can find it. Right? It's not a given that he's going to find this sheep. He's looking for this sheep in the hopes that he can find it. And so some of the things that we see here is value. We see urgency. We see persistence. In this little story here, right? This man is going to be persistent. He's not going to quit. He's not going to stop. This sheep has value to him. So he's going to pursue, and he's going to go over some obstacles, going up the mountain to look for a sheep that might be on some rocky outcropping or might have already fallen down some, you know, big cliff. He's still looking in the hopes that he can find it. And what's the goal? Let's just talk about the goal for a second for this man. It's to find that sheep and get him home, right? Because it's a valuable sheep. Let's get this sheep home. And if so be that he find it, verily I say unto you, he rejoiceth more of that sheep than of 99 which went not astray. So that's where we read value. Because if the sheep wasn't valuable, if this animal wasn't valuable to him, there wouldn't be that much excitement. But think about when you've lost something that was important to you and you found it, the excitement that you had and the satisfaction that you had inside. Maybe you didn't throw a party. Maybe you didn't throw a celebration. Maybe you didn't you know, invite your friends and neighbors over to tell them how much that you found this. But you thought about that thing that you found and were really happy that you found it, didn't you? And you weren't thinking about everything else, but that one thing that you found that was valuable, it created a joy inside. It created a peace and a satisfaction that you found the object that was valuable. And that same notion Jesus now is framing out here, and he says, man, when the man finds that sheep and he brings him home, he rejoices over that sheep because he went and he pursued and he sought that important, valuable sheep. And he found him. So the question in this part of the passage for us is, how valuable are we to each other? Do we pursue each other when we see somebody going astray? You see, the real life challenge to the application of this passage is that very few of us are sitting around doing nothing. With all the time in the world on our hands to pursue. We're all involved in life. We're all involved in a lot of different aspects. And when challenging situations, like somebody who is, you can just see it, right? You just see it that they're going down a road that's not healthy. What do we do? Well, one classic thing that we do, I'm going to be curious if I see some smiles, is we come up to a minister and we say, hey, so-and-so, they're not doing something right, or I'm worried about them. You need to do something. Right? I did that. I can tell you that now I receive that. Why? Because it's work, isn't it? It's work. And it's messy. To start to get into someone's life when you feel that, they're going down a road that's a little tenuous. Now, another thing that we might do is hope that it gets better. The ostrich approach. You don't know your ostrich. When danger comes, they bury their head and they stick their head in the ground, right? Because then it goes away. And so that's another classic approach. Let's just wait. Because if I wait, inevitably things get better, right? Sure they do. The longer I wait, the better things get. No, most of the time, if I've got a sense that my brother or sister is not headed in the right direction, the longer I wait, the worse that direction gets. And so the question for each of us, how important are you to me? How important am I to you? How valuable do you see me as? Am I willing to go up the mountain to try to find you? Am I willing to leave the 99, my comfort zone, to seek you out, to restore your relationship with Jesus if need be? So Jesus leaves that as the starting point, and then he says in verse 15, moreover, like in addition to this, in addition, if your brother trespasses against you, go and tell him his fault. Now, just as a little sidebar, I know there's a number of young people and maybe older people that are counseling right now. I'm really excited to hear that. All right, so pay attention to these verses and pay attention to what we just read too, but pay attention to this, because this is hard life, but it's really important to understand and start to apply early in life. If your brother trespasses against you, go and tell him his fault between thee and him alone. Right? If I do something to you where I hurt you, Jesus says, you need to come and talk to me. Now, there's a reciprocal relationship here. Reciprocal means that we're coming at it from two sides, right? That this is from two different angles. So one angle is Matthew 5, where Jesus is again talking, and Jesus says that if you know your brother has something against you, drop everything and go to him. Matthew 5, 23 and 24, and that's paraphrased. But leave your gift before the altar, Jesus says. Go and reconcile with your brother, and then come and give your gift on the altar. So, if I know that I've hurt you, I am responsible to act. But if I have hurt you, you're also responsible to come talk to me and let me know that I've hurt you. And what is the goal in this? The goal is to gain your brother. And we see this interesting kind of relationship between what we just read in Matthew 18, verses 10 through 14, about the lost sheep and going to find that which was lost. And Jesus building on that in this first verse, in verse 15, and saying, almost as if it's a continuation, right? He says, moreover, like as in addition to the idea of gaining your lost brother by going to find him. If your brother hurts you, go and talk to him. If your sister hurts you, go and talk to her. See if you can repair the relationship so that you can gain your sister back. There's this notion of value, of importance, of urgency, of persistence, of pursuing that relationship that's all built into this one verse of going to win your sister and brother back. But if he will not hear thee, then take with thee one or two more, that in the mouth of two or three witnesses, every word may be established. And so in this part, Jesus actually references a passage in Deuteronomy when he says that in the mouth of two or three witnesses, every word may be established. So he's referencing something that they would have been very familiar with in the Old Testament when he references Deuteronomy. But he says, if I can't solve it, if I can't be reconciled, let's bring a couple other people in that can be part of this as we try to work this out again. And if you shall neglect to hear them, tell it unto the church. So we generally, as we talk about Matthew 18, we call it the Matthew 18 principle. We see the three steps, right? Talk to them by themselves, talk to them with a couple of witnesses, and then bring it before the church. Now, what are we trying to achieve throughout this process, throughout these steps? We're trying to win our brother. This is a reconciliation process. This isn't a slapping him on the hand or giving him a batina, right? This isn't any of that. This is to try to win our brother back. This is to try to reconcile. This is still just a continuation of verse 15. And these are different ways to achieve verse 15 when it says, if he shall hear thee, thou hast gained thy brother. Now, what we do get to is the part that we generally pray that we never get to. And that's verse 17. And we don't like to talk about verse 17. We don't like to apply verse 17. And if you shall neglect to hear them, after you tell it to the church, right? That's step three. There's a step four. But if he neglect to hear the church, let him be unto thee as a heathen man, as a publican. Now, there's a lot of layers to this pass, to this thought. So, if, and let's just, Zach, sorry, I'm going to pick on you. So Zach, if you're valuable to me and there's a break between us and you come to me one-on-one to talk to me and you come in love and in humility with a kind heart trying to express yourself to me, and I choose to ignore it, and then you come back with a couple witnesses with kindness and gentleness, with a desire to win me back, showing love, and I reject you. And then we have to bring it before the church, and the church expresses encouragement, expresses kindness and mercy, and really pushes and urges there to be a reconciliation and a coming back together. And I reject that. What does it say about my heart? What does it say about my heart? I'm not in a good place, am I? I've grieved the Holy Spirit by this point. You can't easily get to that point. If what I just described is really happening, you cannot easily get to that point. So when Jesus says that you just treat the man like a heathen, like a non-believer, and a publican, right, like a tax collector, which are known to cheat. It's serious stuff. But it's also not necessarily a punishment. It's a consequence. It's a consequence of a hard heart that's rejected counsel, that's rejected the Holy Spirit's guidance, the Holy Spirit's encouragement to reconcile, that's rejected the indwelling of Jesus Christ that would have reconciled. Right? There's a lot of rejecting that I would have had to do to get to this point. So this step four, by the time we get to step four, I'm in a bad place. But there's a lot of responsibility. There is a lot of responsibility from Zach, from the witnesses, from the church to get to that point. And so when Jesus says in verse 18 that what the church binds here is also bound in heaven, basically the decisions that the church makes around discipline, right, that's serious stuff. That's not taken lightly. That's serious stuff. Because there's a lot of responsibility that has been built into the love and the pursuit and the seeking of reconciliation to get to that point. And so notice something here, though. I'm just going to take a step back. Notice, so if we believe that Jesus is intentional, which we know that Jesus is intentional, and so if we believe that Jesus is intentional with what he says and what he doesn't say, notice that he doesn't give a lot of qualifiers. He doesn't, when he talks about that sheep, he doesn't say that the sheep deserved to be lost or that the sheep was foolish and running away. He doesn't talk about that sheep at all, other than to say that that sheep went astray. And when he talks about the brother that trespasses against us, he doesn't mention that I deserved it to be trespassed against. He doesn't say that I was acting really poorly or that, again, that there was deserving in any way, shape, or form, right? It's all tied together in saying that just very simply, there are big picture items that need to be addressed. And then we get to the instruction on forgiveness. And so we could very easily, maybe just really quickly, let's kind of encapsulate that first section was somebody that's sinning and they've gone astray. What do we do to win them back? That's verses 10 through 14. Verses 15 through 17, hey, that's if my brother has something against me. Or I'm sorry, if I have something against my brother, if they've done something to me or I've done something to them, right, personal offense, what we need to do. But if I'm going to be a chicken on Matthew 18, verse 15, and say, well, you know, he didn't do anything to me. He just did it to God. So it's not my problem. Actually, it still is. Because all we do is rewind to verse 10 and look at verse 10 through 14. And it's still our responsibility. And it's still something that we need to seek. And so we still own it, one way or the other. And then Jesus ends this whole thought about how important people are with the passage on forgiveness and the parable of the unjust servant. And I don't need to add a lot to this passage because it's pretty clear. There's just a couple of things for us to recognize, right? A couple of really important things in this parable of verses 23 through verse 35. The servant that owed the king money owed so much that it was unpayable. Okay, let's just clarify that. The amount of money that the servant owed the king was not payable. It could not be paid. It was too much. There's no way that it could have been paid back. And so when the servant says, "I will pay you if you're patient," he can't. He can try, but he really can't. And so the king, in his mercy, forgives him, not because he's expecting payment, not because he really expects he's going to get that money. He's merciful. And he forgives it. And then the unjust servant, when he pulls the other servant aside and is doing what he's doing, that amount of money is payable. And yet he won't let him. And so the contrast of what we owe, of what our debt to God is unpayable, right? The only way to pay for our debt is to die. That's the only way to pay our debt. The penalty of sin is death. We cannot get out of it. And we can tell God we're going to pay it. Not going to work. We can't. And so we've been forgiven much. We've been forgiven much. We need to make sure that if you're valuable to me and I'm valuable to you, that I forgive much. I'm just going to tackle a couple key thoughts here. What holds us back from doing this? What holds us back from doing what Jesus is telling us? And I'd like each of us, because I really kind of absorbed this. We had a study on some of this in my own church in Beverly Hills. And there was a lot of interesting just kind of awareness and confession that came out of this from people when they asked themselves, what holds us back from doing this? That really, the first is that, as I said earlier, Darren and Ruslan, you're not important to me. We don't want to say it, but maybe that's the truth, that you aren't important to me. That my love isn't real, that I'm just going through the motions, that ties back to not being important. That there's pride involved on both sides or on either side. That I have a heart that's focused maybe on justice. Maybe I see that they deserved it, right? How many times have you thought that so-and-so deserved what they got? They had it coming. You don't say it, but you kind of think it. That they deserve this. They're finally getting what they deserve. That's a dangerous statement, everybody. Because if we got what we deserve, Jesus wouldn't have come. Right? We're all getting what we don't deserve. And so let's make sure we're considering that for our brother and our sister. And then the last one is tied to importance, but that I don't see value in the relationship. And I don't see a value. you know what? It's okay that I'm distant from them. It's okay if they leave. It's okay. Church would be better off without them anyway. Is that what's going through my mind? Again, I'm not going to say that no, someone's not important to me, but am I thinking that? What holds us back? Are we okay with being distant from our brother and sister and yet knowing that they're going down the wrong road? Are we okay with that? Are you okay even with your friend? Even if you're not a believer, are you okay with your friend going down the wrong road? And you can tell they're getting into dangerous waters. That man, that they're going down a road that's going to get them in some serious trouble with the wrong people. I'm okay with that. I'm okay to be distant. No. Jesus came to save that which was lost. Right? Jesus came to save that which was lost. And we were all lost. And if I've got the heart of Jesus, and if I've got the Spirit indwelling me, which is what I'm supposed to have, and if I surrender to that Spirit, and I surrender to the full indwelling of the Spirit, you are all so important to me. I will do anything I can to try to help, to bring you back home. And so that's my encouragement for us this morning, is that we collectively, right? We collectively, as a body, we as individuals, all need to be on the lookout for each other with a heart of love, with a heart of love, genuine, true love. Looking to bring our brother and our sister back if they're going down the wrong road. And we need to be open to it as well. Right? We need to be open to it as well. Because there's times where I might be the one that needs to be brought back. So I pray that you consider these thoughts and what Jesus says here, his words, that you consider them. And consider who in your life is getting a little further away, that a little love, a little, let's go out for a coffee in the time of COVID, and let's just talk about where you're going and try to win them back. Amen. Song of the hymn that we sang also ties with Galatians chapter 6, verse 1. And it, if you think about it, it really speaks to the health of the body, our ability to work together, to restore one another, to help encourage and draw somebody out from going the wrong way in love and in mercy, reveals the health of the body. And the Apostle Paul, in chapter 6 of Galatians, in the first two verses, says, "Brethren, if a man be overtaken in a fault, you which are spiritual, restore a one." But he doesn't end there, right? He says, in continuing, "In the spirit of meekness, so humbly, considering thyself, lest thou also shall be tempted, bear ye one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ." And so the Apostle Paul, just in writing this, is referencing back to both in Romans as well as in Matthew, the verses that we read this morning. And that just that song reminded me of it. My prayer is that each of us individually can have the courage to follow the process of reconciliation that Jesus outlined in Matthew chapter 18, that each of us individually would follow the teachings of Jesus to seek to repair relationships if I know that I've hurt somebody. If we follow that, we reveal the health of our body. May the Lord bless you and keep you as we continue in the day.